Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
Hello, everyone. You know, everyone is unique. No doubt we all have our own special talents. The idea is to make sure we tap into those talents, those passions, those pursuits of our dreams, and then live them to the fullest. So that's why when I line up my guests, I like to have people that totally blow my mind with what they've chosen to do for their journey. And that is why today I am bringing you a very unique individual. Her name is Mary Stuart Adams, and I believe that she makes us all see the stars in much clearer way than we could have ever imagined. Hello, Mary. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jill. Thanks for having me.
I just love that you could be on, and I appreciate because I know how busy you are and how you are all over the country. And that's really what I want you to tell the audience that's listening. So who is Mary Stuart Adams? And I guess one of the main questions I have for you just to start out with is, what do the stars mean to you? Let's start there.
Okay. Well, answering the question, who is Mary Stuart Adams, is something I'd like somebody else to do. Self-knowledge is sometimes the hardest thing, right?
Right. Absolutely.
But I, as a way to describe myself publicly or professionally, refer to myself as a star lore historian. So star lore, like folklore. So what are the stories of the stars in every culture throughout all of history? So not just what do we know about the starry world from the contemporary science of astronomy, but what did they believe in the Middle Ages and what did the ancients understand? And is it possible to see how the understanding of each culture in every age gave expression to that? Because it seems to me to have been, we've achieved some of the highest things as a humanity out of this striving to know what is our relationship to the stars. So for instance, the Egyptians built their great pyramid at Giza and aligned it to their North Star. We build, you know, the large telescope array in Chile and align it to the stars. And both cultures, though separated by centuries, are doing the same thing, which is somehow by having a knowledge of that which is over us, we can understand more intimately who we are, how we got here, and what we're doing. So I got my education in literature. And so I don't approach this through the sciences and the maths, but more through the humanities. What is the art? What's the poetry? What's the civic organization and ceremonial observance that goes with the stars? And I just, through the inspiration of my mom and through having kind of a stubborn idea that I needed to do this, I developed a way of trying to understand and read the stars to say, you know, if the ancients were correct that the stars were speaking to us, then that should be knowable. And can I know it? This is a human being. So that's how I kind of set out on my journey.
So that does explain the humanities-based approach. You know, well, you know, there's a secret here with Mary and I. We are cousins.
Yes, we
and,
are.
we have been, obviously, we've known each other our whole lives, but, you know, with cousins, everybody goes on their own path. And, you know, Mary and I have come back and forth to each other throughout the years. And I've always been so overwhelmingly impressed with your drive, but it's like a natural drive. I want to know, how did you, I mean, obviously you said, you know, the influence of your mother and, you know, how did you decide that this was going to be your path? I mean, it's not, I guess every journey has its difficulties and its, you know, rewards as well. But this is a unique path that almost you had to kind of dig your own road. I mean, it's not a very common thing, to say the least.
I think it's a good way to say it. I think you can totally relate because you find yourself in a situation where you've got this, it's hard for me to say this with myself, but you have a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question you have is, all right, what do I do with this?
Right.
And it's interesting in our culture, oftentimes we will say to people, follow your star. And it's like, all right, well, finding your star is really difficult. So first you have to find it before you can follow it. And quite literally in my life, the way that happened, and I'm just, Jill, I'm going to try to be quick about this, but you know, we were both born into Irish Catholic families.
Yes.
My mom at the beginning of the 60s went through a crisis in the faith in her religion. She had had, ultimately she ended up having 8 children in 10 years. And this was just really creating a challenging environment for her. And she left the church right before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And this figured significantly in my biography because it meant that I had this very naive idea about being born outside of a formal religious structure. Mm-hmm. But it always left in me a question, like, what is that?
Right.
And when I was 18, I encountered a spiritual stream called Anthroposophy, Anthroposophia, the Anthropo and the Sophia. If you break it down, the Anthropo is the human being and the Sophia is the divine wisdom inherent in being human. So it's not a religion, but it's trying to penetrate through the mystery of life and being in the world and understanding it according to its spiritual foundations. And at the same time, I was meeting the ancient art of astrology. I was just kind of dabbling in that, like, oh, this is interesting. I didn't want to be an astrologer so much as I wanted to understand how did ancient cultures use this to build community and to understand life in their time. And I was a student at the University of Michigan at the time, so studying literature and doing my thing, thinking I was going to be a journalist. But I kept trying to get to this mystery of the human relationship to the stars. And then fast forward through my life, I got married. I had 4 beautiful children. Unfortunately, my marriage ended in divorce. And around the time that I was 37 or so, actually 17 years ago at this time, I nearly died of meningitis.
Oh my gosh, Mary, and I did not know that. Oh my God, I'm a terrible cousin. Okay.
No, that's okay. I mean, you know, we have kids and careers and lives and things that are happening and, you know, we're not keeping up with each other in the day to day, but this was fundamental to my experience because when you go through an illness like that, it really narrows the playing field and you've got to make what you're doing gets much more concentrated.
Absolutely.
And as I came through the other side of that experience, it was very clear to me that I needed to teach about the stars. And I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to explain what it was. I just knew that it needed to happen because I could see that culturally we were being cut off, not just because we live in overlit, overbuilt environments where there's a lot of light pollution and we can't see most of the stars at night, but because we aren't being taught about the star lore in a way that gives us human context for the scientific discovery that we're making. So there's all this incredible stuff that's being discovered with the use of our technology and these brilliant minds that are applying thought and mathematic calculation and deducing, figuring out the atmosphere and the periodicity of orbits and things that are so far away from us that we can't see them with the naked eye. But my sense was, we've left something really essential behind, and we need to take care of that because the stars have inspired some of the greatest achievements. And if we can't access it, we're cutting ourselves off from a source of inspiration that we really desperately need.
So explain to me when it came to, and tell me if my facts are wrong, I think it's 21,000 acres of state-owned land. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And how that came about? I mean, explain, because, as you're speaking and way more intellectually than I ever will be, apparently the brains went in your family. No, I'm kidding. But what I'm saying is that because we all take the stars for granted. Okay. And I know that, I live in Michigan and I live in a city, so I can see them to a point. And then I love when I go to Northern Michigan, which is where you reside.
Yeah.
I see a whole different world. And just recently I was in Lake Tahoe and I saw this beautiful sky that, there's just so many different ways to see it. We do take it for granted. You have gone beyond just educating people, but you have protected it. So can you tell us a little bit about that, or a lot about that? I'd like to hear.
Yeah, and I think this is this is fundamental to what we're talking about, right? Like, mm-hmm. how do you really, like, follow the thing that really drives your passion?
Yes.
And I just, in a very bullheaded way, after the experiences I had, thought, man, I got to do this. And it's kind of a funny story. I was at a Young Eagles program, which is a thing that's done by small plane pilots, and they'll go to, you know, public airports around the area. So in Harbor Springs, there's an airport, and they were doing this program. And what they do is they take children up in airplanes and they let them fly to try to develop an enthusiasm for flight so that people will continue to be interested in learning how to fly planes.
Wow.
And so I was standing there on the tarmac. I got my four kids, and this photographer was running after me saying, "Are you the mother? Are you the mother?" And I'm like, usually the one with the most kids. And so I was like, "Yeah, I'm the mom." But come to find out, he was looking for someone else whose child had written an essay that resulted in them winning free flight lessons in Oshkosh. Okay, so I didn't even know there was an essay contest. I was just like bringing my kids to do this thing. So I'm standing next to him later, very boldly looked at him and said, "Well, aren't you going to take my picture anyway?"
In your shy way.
Right. And he said, "Well, that depends. Are you famous?" And I said, "In my own world, I am." Okay, now this is like 16, 17 years ago. He laughed at me. He said, "Okay, well, what do you do?" And I said, "Well, I teach about the night sky." "What do you mean?" I said, "The stars." And so we had this kind of banter back and forth, you know, and I figured we're just joking around. We're just killing time waiting for the kids to land. And the next day he called me. Turns out he was a newspaper reporter, and he wrote an article about me and put it on the front page of the paper.
Well, that's no accident. Talk about stars aligning there, sister.
This is the kind of thing where it's like you just have this drive in your belly and in your heart and your whole being, and you have to go at it. And there I was, just being myself.
Right.
And somebody showed up in my path that saw me and said, yes.
But this is the message, too, and not to interrupt, but for Dream Big listeners. And this is what I always try to tell my clients, and I try to tell them, if you are on the right journey, if you are sending the right energy out and you are so passionate, I mean, just passionate enough to say to this guy, you know, some of you don't know, take my picture. You know, I mean, not just that, but you had a subliminal agenda without even knowing it. And that's what attracts people when you're on the path of your total purpose. Okay. So go ahead and finish
there. Honestly, you know, this far down the road, I can say, yes, I needed to show up so that the other players that could help make this happen could also show up. But I happened to be the one that had to show up first. Now, you know, we're not always the one that shows up first, but to the extent that we can say yes when we see people and confirm them,
yes,
then that can happen for us as well.
Right.
And so I think it's challenging because sometimes, you know, there's a lot of self-interest. I want my thing to work, but then how can I help the other person get their thing going? Because eventually that help is going to come to me as well. I learned that along the way. But then what resulted from that is that that article led to someone else in the community who was doing work about lighting technology and trying to safeguard the environment from light pollution. She called me to say, "We'd like to give you an award as a dark sky advocate." I'm like, "Well, who are you guys? I didn't even know you existed. I'm over here teaching the stories of the night sky, but you're there protecting, you know, from light pollution." So this really serendipitous thing happened where Fred, the photographer reporter, and Mary Lou, the person who ran this outdoor lighting forum, and me, the storyteller, we all got together and then we started to scheme. And Mary Lou was the person who told me about the International Dark Sky Association. And she said, "You know, they designate areas that are protected for that you can protect the night sky." And Fred said, "You know, Emmett County has this park. It's naturally dark. Mary, you could go up there and do your programs and we could get it protected and let's do this." I'm like, "Okay, I'll do it." And so when I went to the Emmett County Board of Commissioners in 2009, I kind of went like kicking and screaming into the room because I had never been into a county boardroom. Fred got me on the agenda, pushed me up in front of the commissioners and said, "Okay, tell them what you do." And so I explained that I was a storyteller of the stars. They had a park that was naturally dark and we could protect it for its night sky. And they really kind of laughed at me like, "Are you kidding? A sky park?" And I just said, you know, I knew in my bones that the human being is longing for a connection and a knowledge of the stars. We just have to say, "You can come here and get that."
Oh, I love it.
And so they said, "Yes, go for it." Took 2 years to put together the application, measure the light, and do all the things that the International Dark Sky Association requires in order for them to give you this designation. And then in 2011, we achieved that designation, we were only the sixth international dark sky park in the United States and only the ninth in the world. So this is 7 years ago. There are now over 100 international dark sky parks. So
I have goosebumps context. All over
yeah,
right
like
now.
We were hitting it just as this, like we're pushing this wave up to crest. It's just about to peak and we were like riding that wave.
You were sixth. I mean, sixth. That's incredible. And, you know, especially when you didn't really know about it yet. I mean, you were just you know, thrust into this because of your passion. And I think that that's just incredible. Okay. So now
and
there's how many?
Now they're over 100. But I had a colleague at the time who was like, man, my God, you do so many different things. I said, oh, no. I'm always only ever doing one thing. But it shows up in a lot of different ways. And that one thing is safeguarding the human imagination by protecting our access to the night sky and its stories.
Wow.
And so for me, that means if I'm invited into a fourth grade classroom or out on a tall ship or over to a national park or into a county board meeting, you know, I'm standing there for the human connection to the stars. That's the one thing I'm always doing. And I always have to check in with myself because I get distracted. I get competitive, I get thrust down, and then I have to remember, wait, I'm standing for the human imagination, keep going. And so
it's a brilliant mission statement. And I think that that is, you know, I think I know myself, being a creative person, I have a hard time just working on one thing. But and then people say, oh, you know, even my mother-in-law says, Jill, you have more ideas than you have time on this planet. She's right, but I still have the same mission. And it really is just giving. I mean, that's my mission, to give to people, to make people feel better, you know, on a daily basis.
The bigger the, you know, the like the more simple it is, the bigger it is, right?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And
right.
So so what happened when we got designated in 2011, there was huge fanfare and a lot of people started to pay attention. Now, I had been since 2002 when I moved to Northern Michigan. I mean, I grew up in Southeast Michigan, then I moved up here in 2002. I had been anywhere that I could get audience. I was like talking to students. I was talking at, you know, meetings and just like planting seeds. When I look back now, it was like I was planting the seeds so that once we got the designation in 2011, there was enough awareness in the community that people were like, yeah. And so then one of my friends was the executive director of the Little Traverse Land Conservancy. And he realized that after 30 years of protecting the land, he was also simultaneously, although unconsciously, protecting the sky. Hmm. He got really excited about this, and he had a long history of working very productively with the state of Michigan on different kinds of legislation and things. So he was very familiar with how to draft citizen legislation, and he said, you know what, Mayor? There's a lot of state parks where it's naturally dark. We could get the state of Michigan to recognize this, and we could kind of create a bigger playing field for the whole dark sky movement in Michigan. So he drafted the legislation. Our state rep sponsored it. He and I went down to Lansing. We testified on behalf of what was then known as House Bill 5414. Now, this is in 2011. Then in 2012, it was signed into legislation. There were 21,000 acres of state land now protected for its night sky. And then in 2016, that legislation was amended to include three more parks. So now we have over 35,000 acres of state land in Michigan that's protected for its night sky.
I am like just so proud of you. I mean, seriously, I'm hearing this and it just makes me cry. I am proud of all of you. Yes. But can I just like point you out right now? Cause you're on the radio, but I just, the amount you've done in really, I mean, I know it might feel like centuries to you, but a short period of time from the time, I mean, I obviously you've had this passion in your heart and your soul, but just the work you put into it. And on top of it, may I point out that what you do too, you know, I'd like you to explain a little bit about like, you know, in Mackinac, how you have those events that go on. Even though, you know, we're hearing the intellectual side, we're hearing the work that went into it, but also the joy that you give people on a daily basis. Can you tell our listeners some of the events that you hold and what they could expect if they chose to, you know, maybe go to a Mackinac one or wherever you are in the country?
Yeah. So I just on Sunday night did the last cruise of the season that I do with Shepherd's Ferry Service. So this happens throughout the summer months. And we go out, usually I time it so that we're going out at sunset when the full moon is rising so that we can catch the sun setting into Lake Michigan while the full moon is rising over Lake Huron. And we're cruising out onto the Mackinac Bridge. I mean, this is a total Michigan experience. Like you're getting the Great Lakes, you're getting the Great Lights, you got the Great Bridge. And what I do then is narrate the scene overhead. I might sprinkle in some of the history that I know of the area, but mostly it's about identifying what we can see in the night sky and what's the story connected to it. I don't use a laser pointer. I don't use a telescope because I'm really intent on having a direct encounter. What does the human being have to go through to know this stuff? And I don't want to take shortcuts because what we're shortcutting through is all of this art and poetry and stuff that makes life beautiful. So I might recite a poem by John Keats, or I might tell a Greek mythology. I might share a tale from the Native American people of this region to really build a human context. So then when you're looking at Venus and you know that you're doing it, you can say, ah, now I have an experience of that.
And I love that you say that, you know, I mean, nothing against telescopes and all that, but, you know, I think that you're keeping the magic. You know, when I look at a sky, I mean, how many of us walk around with a telescope? We don't. So the fact that, you know, in fact, we had this big argument the other night when we were in California and somebody was saying, or no, we were in Lake Tahoe and somebody was saying, is that a plane over there? And we're like, it's not moving. And so we were all arguing about that. Couldn't possibly be a star. It was so bright. And I was like, gosh, I should just call Mary and ask her what it is. And so I just made up like, I think it's Mercury. Like I had no idea. And so everybody believed me. But, you know, the point is like, if you can, you know, intellectually you tell us what to do, but then we still have that childlike feeling of wishing on a star and seeing these magical things that we're uneducated, we're unfamiliar with, and I think it's a shame, you know, and the fact that you're protecting so much of our sky.
And more than it being a shame, at a certain point, if I'm really dogmatic about it, I can say that that's a social crisis.
Because I agree.
What happens, you know, the stars are shining down on all of us, everywhere in the world, no matter what religion, no matter what nation, no matter what age, no matter what gender, no matter what. Stars are shining.
Right.
And so astronomy in its truest striving goes across all those boundaries and potential barriers and creates naturally an appreciation for different cultures, because every culture throughout every age of humanity has had a star lore and a belief about the human relationship to that. And if we can't see it and we can't identify it, then we're being cut off from something that could really be helping us develop appreciation for diverse cultures.
So you're building community in a way, like almost subliminally building community, you know, and keeping us all together, where in a lot of spaces in this world, that's not happening, obviously. So, I mean, this is one more gentle way, actually, to bring people together. And, you know, I've seen the photos. I've yet to get up to one of your, and one of these days I'm going to surprise you and I'm just going to be on that boat. But, for those of you that aren't familiar with Michigan, Mackinac Island is a magical place. Where Mary lives is a magical place. I mean, there's beautiful waters. And just to experience it, you do feel like you're kind of leaving the planet. And see, Mary, there you are taking us to other planets. And that's
the beautiful thing about doing this from Michigan, as you know, I mean, it's the Great Lakes state. Mm-hmm. And one of the main properties of water is that it is a reflector. So the water is continually reflecting the sky up into our environment, whether it's the gray clouds or the deep blue, or sometimes the lake lays down enough that you can see the reflection of planets and stars in it, just reflecting up into the environment. So when you're around water, you're getting this kind of double whammy, as above, from below at the same time. And so it creates this really nice aura for doing this kind of work. But, you know, Jill, I should share with you that I was in Tucson, Arizona earlier, a week ago today, for a job interview at a big observatory out there. And I'm really struggling right now.
Mary's going to leave Michigan.
No, here's my struggle.
Okay.
It's like, I want to share this because I think it's something that we all deal with. I want to, excuse me, I want the steadiness and the stability of a regular paycheck and the benefits that come with that. But at the same time, I feel like I don't want to compromise the freedom that I need in order to pursue this thing out of my human beingness.
Well, that is.
And so what I'm caught with is, do I go for the security, or do I stay independent and, you know, come what may, and just try to really make it happen, which I have been doing.
Right.
I didn't start out thinking, oh, I'm going to create a dark sky park and then all these other things are going to happen. I didn't know that was going to come
about. No, you don't. And that's the beauty of following your passion. Okay. Unfortunately, we could talk about this forever. I do have to wrap up here, but Mary, do me a favor. And will you give a website to our listeners of ways they can learn more about you?
Thank you for asking. It's The Storyteller's Night Sky. If you Google Mary Stuart Adams stars, it'll pop up.
Fantastic.
StorytellersNightSky.com. And I do a lot of weekly stuff just about what's the story in the stars this week. And I touch into the science, but it's more about the story of it. So
well, I can't thank you enough. And we'll all send wonderful energy to help you make your decision. But I know that whatever you do, it's going to be right. And so that's everyone, listeners, send it to Mary so that she, I know that no matter what she chooses, it will be the right path. It doesn't matter. I also want to thank 20 Front Street, who's sponsored today. 20 Front Street is an intimate listening room. It's a live music venue, and it also has a cafe and a creamery. It's located in the village of Lake Orion, Michigan. It is a magical place of its own. And Mary, keep helping us, be observant to the skies, be respectful. And we can't thank you enough for being with us today on Empower Radio on Dream Big. Okay. So have a wonderful
week.
Thanks
so much, Jill. And thanks for all of your inspiration. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Keep dreaming big, baby. All right. Thank you.